Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Welcome to another episode of Conversations with Annalisa Barbieri. Today we're talking funerals, but before you panic, honestly, this episode is not only interesting, but also really calming. I'm in conversation with progressive funeral director Louise Winter, whose company Poetic Endings is based in London. Louise is about as far removed from the archetypal funeral director as you can imagine. Louise has also written a really great book with end-of-life doula Anna Lyons called We All Know How This Ends. I thoroughly recommend this book, which is, to quote Anna and Louise, a book about life and living as much as it is about death and dying. We're all going to die, and that's okay. Let's talk about it. This sentiment is what I really want to endorse and encourage with this episode. In this episode, we talk about what to do when someone dies, what the law is around funerals, and you may be surprised to hear there are surprisingly few, what options you have for ceremonies and coffins and hearses, burials and cremation. We also have a peek into the future at what might be around the corner to offer alternatives to burial and cremation. We talk frankly but gently about dead bodies and funerals, so if this subject is a bit tender for you right now, you may want to bookmark this episode for later. For those who want to hear more around the subject, and if you haven't already, do listen to the companion episodes. There's What to Expect When Someone Dies in Series 1 with Dr. Catherine Mannix, and Processing Grief with Jane Harris in Series 3, who incidentally I also mention in this episode with regard to her son Josh's funeral. All organisations mentioned in this episode will be linked to in the episode description. Be a little bit brave and have a listen. If you'd like to listen to this podcast ad-free and before it goes on general release, please consider becoming a patron from just £3 a month, or you can give a one-off donation via Acast Supporter. Both links will be in the episode description. Louise, hello and welcome to this episode. We're going to be talking about funerals, but I'd like to start with when somebody dies. If somebody dies at home, who do I call?
It all depends on the circumstances. So if it's an expected death, if someone has been ill at home for a while, they are in palliative care, then the person you need to call, first of all, is the on-call doctor who will need to come and certify the death so that the death can be registered before anything else can take place. If it's an unexpected death, then you will need to call the police and they will come and the coroner will become involved and will investigate, and there may be post-mortems. The coroner will need to establish why the person has died. But the main thing to remember is that if someone dies at home and it's an expected death, it is not an emergency and there is no need to call 999. It's not a panic and you can take your time to do what you need to do and just sit with the person for a while. And then you might want to call the funeral directors when you're ready for the person to be collected.
Sure. This brings me on to, you know, what the process is. And I think it's really important to say that you can keep the body at home, because there's a lot of panic and misinformation, I think, about death. When my dad died, he died at home and we had a hospice worker with us, and she was able to say that my dad was dead, because I have to say, and I don't know if this is unusual, I really doubted that he was. I kept saying, are you sure? Are you sure? And I was surprised at my doubt. But then my mother very much wanted to keep my dad at home for a bit, and I'm really glad she did, because it was actually really lovely to be able to sit with him. And I know that might sound a bit strange to some people, but so you don't have to get rid of the body straight away. But how long can you keep it at home? Is there like a requirement to have the death certified in a certain amount of time?
Yes, there is. The death does have to be registered within 5 days, providing the doctors have completed all the necessary paperwork and time. And depending on coroner involvement, it can complicate the process a little. But to go back to someone dying at home and then being taken care of there, so you don't actually have to involve a funeral director at all if you don't want to. You can keep the person's body at home with you for as long as you want to. So it all depends on the conditions, on how the person died, on whether it's the height of summer as well. The heating really needs to be switched off. The windows need to be kept closed. You want to keep nature out.
Right.
But you can keep someone at home. It's always best to have a backup plan because people can change quite a lot after they have died. Nature can begin taking its course, and it can sometimes, not always, but sometimes become quite unpleasant. So if you were wanting to do it all yourself and keep the person at home until the day of the funeral, then it's worth having a friendly funeral director as a plan B. And if that sounds too extreme, then you don't have to keep the person the whole time. You can just keep them until you're ready. Having some time with them can make it become very real, that you can see with your own eyes, sit in the room with them and witness the fact that they have now died. So when people call us, we always say that there is absolutely no rush for us to come, that they could just light a candle, that they can play some music, that they can just have some time together until they're ready. And for some people, that's a couple of hours. For some people, that might be waiting until the next day and then asking us to come when it feels right. My colleague Claire talks about when her dad died, and they hadn't had very much sleep for quite a few days, and he died in the middle of the night, and they just had a couple of hours sleep. They left him where he was and then woke up and had lovely bacon sandwiches before they called the funeral director and had the funeral director come. And they were able just to sit together as a family and eat those bacon sandwiches whilst their dad was still in the house and come together as a family and share memories. And she talks about it as such a sacred, special time. And I think it's all about just doing what feels right in the moment, even if it feels completely wrong, but finding something that enables you to do what you need to do in that moment and helps it all to become real and doesn't involve panicking and having to have the person taken away straight away, because most of the time that's really not what is needed. And it's not illegal to keep somebody at home either. You absolutely can do what's right for you.
Yeah, we're going to talk later on about the law and funerals, but that's good to know. And I totally understand what your colleague Claire says, because I look back on that as a really special and sacred time. I didn't have the bacon sandwiches though, but that does sound lovely. And I know a lot of people find that really strange, but again, it's about what you're comfortable with. But I really want people to talk more about death, dying, funerals, so they can really think about what's possible, because you can go into a state of shock and panic, can't you? And, you know, a funeral is the ultimate distress purchase if you haven't thought about it before. And actually, a lot of people can go back and really regret that. And if someone had said to me, you'll find this time with your dad really special, I would have been horrified a few years ago. But actually, it was really lovely. And the other thing to say is that there's always this thing about bodies are cold, but of course they're at room temperature, aren't they? Whatever that room temperature is.
Yes. Well, if they've died at home, then they will stay at room temperature. But if they go off to a funeral director's, most funeral directors now have refrigeration, and that is how we have to keep people. We need to keep them cold, and that stops nature from taking over. So if you do go to a funeral home to see your person, they might feel cold to touch, and that's just because they need to be kept cool in order to stop nature from taking its course.
So when someone dies, you could keep them at home and arrange your own funeral and they could go from your house, or you could call a funeral director and have the body taken away. I mean, we're going to talk about how you can plan a funeral so that you can have a lot of your own stuff, some that's perhaps more traditional. But in terms of the body, it's basically a funeral director who would take the body and keep it cool. Is that right?
Yes, yes. If you go down the conventional route and you don't want to do a full DIY funeral, because some people do, you don't have to have a funeral director in England by law. So some people choose to be their own funeral director and do what's called a DIY funeral. But most people will call a funeral director and ask them to be involved.
Okay. So if you involve a funeral director, they would take the body away, they would keep it cool, and then we get on to organising the funeral. Now, for a lot of people, they think they have to follow a certain criteria. And I think that due to some sort of high profile deaths where they had something called direct cremation, that was the first time I started hearing people realising that actually you didn't have to do it in a particular way. When people come to you in your experience, what are some of the things they may want to think about if they're organising a funeral? What's possible, what isn't?
So the first thing we do when people come is ask them what's happened and ask them about the person who has died. If they can, because not everyone feels that they are able to share anything at that time, but we try to get them talking about the person's life and what they were like and what they were into, so we can figure out what might be a fitting funeral for them. Mm-hmm. And in terms of funerals, there really are just endless possibilities. There are less laws around funerals than there are around weddings. Most people think it would be the other way around, but if a funeral can actually take place anywhere, there are no laws around where funerals can be. So the main problem is that some venues are not particularly accommodating of having someone in a coffin, and we have to think about logistics and narrow doorways and parking and that kind of thing. But in theory, you can have the funeral anywhere you like. It doesn't just have to be a church or a crematorium or a cemetery chapel. You can use community halls, historic houses. We've had people who have used their own gardens and had the funeral in their garden. There are lots of different options for where the funeral itself can be, and also how it feels. So we try to encourage people to think about what they need from the funeral, because I think all my work comes back to that the funeral is about the person who has died, but it's for the benefit of the living. Mm-hmm. So the funeral has to serve them. So for some people, that is doing something quite elaborate or quite traditional, or doing something very informal, or doing something which involves lots of people getting involved and doing things and lots of people speaking. Funerals are all very, very different. They don't just have to follow a conventional template. And another thing you can do is just not have a funeral at all. So that has become increasingly popular in recent years. So that's called a direct cremation. Mm-hmm. And that's when the person is cremated with no ceremony and nobody in attendance. The person is usually collected from wherever they've died and then taken off to a facility and cremated, and then the ashes are returned at a later date. It's quite an industrial process, and there are some big operators who are now the big direct cremation providers, and they are the people that you will see advertising on daytime television. So it's becoming increasingly popular. My granny actually cancelled her own funeral arrangement and asked for a direct cremation. And it was a very unpopular decision with my family because it meant we didn't get to come together to say goodbye to her, that she just went off to the crematorium, and that was the end. And we didn't get to mark the fact that she had died. It is a possibility, but it's also worth thinking about the consequences. It's popular with the kind of people that say, oh, just throw me out with the bins, don't waste your money on me, just go to the pub and have a party. And my reservations around it are to do with that it just doesn't provide any space for grieving people to be able to express their grief or honour the person that has died. And it makes me quite sad, actually, that that's where we're going as a society. But in between the brutality of direct cremation and having a full-on elaborate traditional funeral with hearses and lots of limousines and funeral directors in top hats with canes parading around, there's an entire spectrum of options. And that includes doing something simpler. And we've had some absolutely incredible, meaningful funerals that have been so simple. They have just been early morning at the crematorium with a few people in attendance and no formal ceremony, but just having the doors open and the sunlight shining through and the bird song coming in from outside and just reading a simple poem and just saying goodbye. Funerals don't have to be either nothing or everything. You can create something which feels right and gives you space to do what you need to do. And I think knowing about the full spectrum of options is really important, and knowing as well that not all funeral directors are the same. They all have very different approaches. There are the big corporates, there are the very traditional family companies that have been around for 9 generations and will do things in a very particular way. But there are also lots of women who have come into the funeral industry in the last few years and are running very different businesses that are much more emotionally intelligent and sensitive and creative and dynamic. And it's about finding the right people to support you to do what you need to do.
Yeah, I mean, we have wedding planners. Not everyone will get married, but everyone will die. And exactly. Maybe need to think about funeral planners. But I think the hiccup there is, like I said, people are terrified about talking about this. And I think in a way, the direct cremation, which I must stress, is really right for some families. My father-in-law had a direct cremation and so did my mother-in-law. I'm Catholic, so when we have funerals, we have a very particular format to follow, which I personally find extremely comforting. But I think in a way, the direct cremation thing is almost a way of, for some people, maybe not thinking about it, they can sometimes feel like it hasn't been marked. And so they could do that, but with a memorial or party or something afterwards, if that's the way they want to go. Can you give us some ideas about what some people have done that maybe might not surprise you now, but in the beginning when you first became a funeral director, may have surprised you? We hear about woodland burials. I know that Jane and Jimmy Harris, who did the grief episode with us, I watched the film they made of their son Josh's funeral. And that was so beautiful because they hired a community hall. He was in his early 20s when he died. So they had all his friends. It was a day-long event. Friends singing, reading poetry, and they had different stages, and it was really beautiful. And I saw that about 8 years ago, and it really changed the way I think about funerals and what's possible. Can you give us any more ideas or examples of what people have done?
Yeah, absolutely. And the film that Jane and Jimmy put together is so beautiful. And at the time of such, I think the word is liminality, when in this strange space of the person who's just died, and it can be traumatic and shocking and terrible, and to be able to put something together that's so beautiful can really help some people, just to help people to find a way forward, to find a way, because life is going to go on, even though it feels it really won't when it happens. Life goes on, and this is all about finding a way to help us acknowledge that life is going to go on. I've been really blown away over the years by some really awful situations that people have faced and how they have found a way through them by creating the most incredible funeral ceremonies. And sometimes that's really elaborate. Sometimes it's incredibly thoughtful and slow and considered. I think one of the most meaningful ways of saying goodbye has been when the service itself has been split from the committal. So the committal is the moment of letting go, when either the coffin goes out of sight at the crematorium or the coffin goes into the ground in the cemetery or a natural burial ground. And we've had some situations where we've had a service which has felt very celebratory and acknowledging the life of the person that has died and having friends and family there. And then the next day, just a handful of very close people have been in attendance at, for example, the crematorium, and then just sat for a while and maybe played a playlist of favourite music. And then when the time has felt right, someone has got up and gone to the lectern at the front and pressed the button, and the coffin has gone out of sight. And it's about the process. It's about taking time to think about what's right, to create an event which takes you through all the stages, that remembers the life of the person that's died, but also includes the farewell and doesn't dismiss that. And people approach that in different ways. We have helped people create yurts in the countryside with sound systems and then blasted out music into the valley before we've taken the coffin through a trail of wildflowers into the woodland and then buried the person in the ground. We have had situations where we've had Gods of Honour. That's one of the most moving parts of the work that I do, actually, when, for example, if we are leaving the service hall within a natural burial ground to go to the graveside, we will ask everyone to line the route, and then we will carry the person, or friends and family will carry the person through that guard of honour. And it always happens really organically. We never know whether how that's going to be. Sometimes it happens in complete silence and you could hear a pin drop because it's just so solemn and the feeling of such profound sadness is really there. And on other occasions, one person starts clapping and then the guard of honour quickly turns into a round of applause. It's just so beautiful to see that. And it feels, there's something so intrinsically human about creating all these things, finding ways of getting people engaged with the funeral. So they're not just sitting in the crematorium and nodding along to a service and then standing at the flower terrace at the end before going to the pub, but really engaging with it. Placing flowers on the coffin, writing messages, and then going up to the coffin and being able to tie the messages on the coffin. Just, there are all these little ways of just getting people engaged, which I think really go back to that. The funeral is about the person, but for the benefit of the living. And the more we get people engaged in that, even though it can feel really hard, I think the better it is for our long-term grief.
And in terms of, there's cremation and there's burial, isn't there? So you can decide. Now, crematoriums always terrified me, but my dad was cremated, and actually in reality it wasn't that scary as I remembered it. They can be quite soulless places though. If somebody does want to be cremated, what can they do to make the cremation part a bit more personal?
So we're in Southeast London and we cover all of London, so that involves, regularly we go to about 33 crematoria all over London, so I've really seen the full spectrum of the good, the bad and the very, very ugly. Some of them are really beautiful spaces. They're either historically beautiful and quite significant and listed buildings, or there are some new crematoria which have been designed very recently and with much more aesthetical considerations and thinking about ceremony space. And then there are also some of the truly awful 1960s council buildings, which are completely soulless. And one thing to note is that you don't just have to go to your local crematorium. Mm-hmm. You can choose the one that's right for you. So by travelling a little bit further afield, perhaps, or just not considering that just because you live in a particular town, you have to go to that town's crematoria, you can have a much better experience. Some of them are more generous with the times that they give for services as well.
How much time do people generally get?
Well, in some crematoria, they are limited to 30 minutes, which will allow for about 20 minutes of the service itself. Some crematoria are much more generous than that and will allow much longer. Some of the most generous around where we are will allow up to an hour. You can also ask for double service time or even triple service time, so you don't have to be restricted to that timing anyway. And even if you're not going to use the whole of the double service time, we often recommend that people do have the double service time because it just allows a bit more space for things to happen a bit more organically. Mm-hmm. And if someone's tribute goes on a bit longer, or it feels right to go up to the coffin and say goodbye in a particular way and you don't want to feel rushed about that, then having double service time is really valuable.
So I guess you could go and visit them, could you? If you wanted to pick one,
yeah,
that
absolutely.
Your local one was just awful, you could go and visit them. I mean, like, I'm going back to the wedding thing. People go and visit venues. And yet again, we have this resistance with funerals. So you can go and visit them. And is there any other way you can make them more personal? You can choose the music, can't you?
Absolutely, you can choose the music. You can choose the entire service. Services don't have to be templated at all. My granddad's funeral, which is how I got into becoming a funeral director, I really felt like the funeral we had for him, which did last for about 20 minutes, was just templated and that would be rolled out 12 times that day. And actually, that doesn't have to be the case. It's all about the approach that you're taking. The funeral directors you have chosen, they play a massive part in it. If you want to have a very formal funeral with very traditional funeral directors that are usually men walking in front of very shiny hearses, then absolutely you can have that. And that will set a particular tone for the way it feels at the crematorium. But you don't have to have that. It can be more informal. You don't have to have a hearse that looks like a hearse. We have all sorts of options that are much more discreet. Choose something like the Library for Discovery, or an electric vehicle that's been converted, or there is a leopard print hearse, a rainbow hearse. There are sort of ways of making it much more personal and friendly and less intimidating. And having funeral directors that are more informal, or asking them not to wear all the traditional funeral Victoriana stuff, but still looking smart, but maybe a little more informal and a little bit more relaxed. You can ask people to wear something very specific. You can have things like the guard of honour lining the driveway up the crematorium. You might be able to do things like have candles. Not all crematoria are friendly towards having candles. It's a battle we're always having, but just small ways of making it a better space. Even if the local crematoria that you choose to go to isn't potentially the nicest crematoria, there are ways of bringing all the love and life into it by personalising every other aspect of it.
Yes, because sometimes, inevitably actually, at funerals you may have the people left behind who are varying in ages and ideas. I mean, you talked about your granny and you followed her instructions. I've organised, I think, about 4 or 5 funerals now, and we've always followed a certain template that was right for us. But I knew that you could do something different, and I knew it would have been absolutely not accepted by the older members of the community. You must come across that where you have older people have an idea of what a funeral will be. Of course, they might not. I'm just generalising. And maybe more informed people. If you're organising a funeral as a layperson and you have that, how can you sort of satisfy everyone? I suppose it's the person closest to the one that's died that gets to choose.
So it all depends on the circumstances. If there are executors who have been appointed, then they can take over all funeral arrangements. But in general, it tends to be the next of kin that is responsible for arranging the funeral, unless the next of kin hands that responsibility over to somebody else willingly. And I think if a funeral is planned well, and the more contemporary funerals that we're involved with are not supposed to be alienating, we still want them to feel like a funeral. And actually, I'm quite cautious about the trend towards turning everything into a celebration of life and, oh, it should all be really colourful. And actually, a lot of the funerals that we're involved with feel quite conservative, because ultimately someone has died and people are grieving, and that affects an entire community. And even if the person was the most vibrant, outgoing, open-minded, wild, adventurous person, the people who are grieving might not be all like that. And the funeral needs to be a good coming together of what that person meant to lots of different people. So it's not about just dismissing everything to do with traditional funerals and rituals, but about making them relevant to the person that's died and the people who are left behind. I think this is why my granny cancelled her funeral and ended up with a direct cremation, because she'd spent a lifetime going to really awful funerals, and particularly in the 1960s and 70s. Funerals that took place at the crematoria were incredibly templated. That's where a lot of preconceptions around funerals come from, because of attending funerals in the 60s and 70s, where there was a duty minister who would take every funeral that day, and 5 minutes before the funeral would just find out the name of the person who has died and then just add that to the standard religious template. So there's a hangover from those days, and actually we've come on so far since then, and there is an entire spectrum of options and different people who can take funerals and celebrants that can lead services from a non-religious perspective, and humanists and people who are much more spiritual, and people that are person-centered and will create a really bespoke script and rituals that are entirely designed around the person who's died and family and friends and the people attending.
You don't need a sort of registered person to say a few words, do you? Because I'm speaking as a Catholic, and we have very strict rules before someone is committed. But if you're not religious and you don't have those guidelines, can you just bury or cremate someone and a layperson say a few words? Or do you have to have someone official?
Oh no, you don't have to have someone official at all. Some of the most moving funerals we've been involved in have been when there's no official minister or a celebrant, but a family member or a friend will take that role. Sometimes it goes very well, sometimes it doesn't go so well, because it's quite a stressful thing to do. And holding the space and also guiding everyone through the process of the ceremonial aspects of it, and helping everyone to understand what's going to happen. And because the person that's up there sort of holding the space together is really framing it and taking everyone on a journey through however long we are in that space. But absolutely, if you have got a family member who wants to do it, or a friend, or it helps if you have a friend who is an actress or something like that, so they're used to public speaking and presenting well, but can be incredibly meaningful and really heartfelt and really a really incredible thing to do. Can also be incredibly stressful. And one thing we do advise is if the people we're working with do want to do that, then we can have what we call a guiding celebrant. So that's someone in the background who is an expert really at doing funerals and understands how the music systems work at the crematoria and cemeteries and understands timings and understands the flow of ceremony as well. So although they won't be necessarily visible on the day, they will be there behind the scenes ensuring that it all flows together really beautifully and that the music buttons are all pressed at the right time.
Yeah, there's some really good practical tips. Thank you. Because people may feel very strongly that they want to do something, but actually when they get there, they may get tongue-tied or stressed. And I think that sort of conductor of the occasion is actually really important to allow things to go smoothly. So then you can concentrate on the personal details and I won't say enjoy it, but maybe get the best out of it rather than worrying about the technicalities.
I was a celebrant before I became a funeral director. And when a dear friend of mine died, Lilan, her family asked me to be the celebrant and the funeral director. I agreed, and it was the biggest honour, and it was really incredible to do. But looking back, by being the celebrant, it meant that I was having to hold space for other people. And actually, I was really emotional on the day and was unable to grieve in the way that I needed to for her, because I really had to hold it together to be able to do some quite practical things, including pressing buttons for music and ensuring things happened when they were supposed to happen. So it's worth considering that if you want to do that role, actually how it might affect you emotionally and whether it will actually give you the space to be able to grieve and to really be present with all the emotions that come up in that situation.
Absolutely, I totally agree.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
You've mentioned you don't need a hearse. Do you need a coffin?
When I say don't need a hearse, you do need a hearse, because the coffin has got to somehow get from...
Yeah, you can put a coffin in an estate car, can't you? You can transport it in a suitable vehicle.
Yes, you can. You can do that. Yes, you can do that. Do you need a coffin? Yes, you don't necessarily have to have a traditional coffin. You cannot display a dead body in public. So you need something, and it doesn't have to be a traditional wooden coffin. It doesn't have to be super expensive. You can have a shroud. So that is a covering over the person. The person usually needs to be on a board underneath the shroud. They tend to be used more for natural burials. They can be used for cremations, but not all crematoria will accept them. And we have had rows with quite a few London crematoria about their policy on not allowing people to be cremated in a shroud. And there are lots of different options for coffins that don't have to be so intimidating, if that's what people are not wanting to have a big traditional wooden casket type thing. There is Yorkshire wool, there's banana leaf, there's loom, there's Somerset willow is one of my favourite. There's cardboard, you can decorate cardboard coffins, you can have children going and putting handprints on them, people doing collages. There's a wonderful man called John in Wales who makes the most beautiful coffins at home out of recycled pallets, and then they go all over the country, and they are not prohibitively expensive, but they're a really eco-friendly option, really beautiful, handmade, but environmentally friendly.
You can make your own coffin as well, can't you?
You can make your own coffin as well, yes. A lot of this comes down to policies at different crematoria, and some are stricter than others. And there are various regulations around making sure that the coffin is sturdy enough so that we don't have any awful events happening as they're carrying in, for example. So it does have to be sturdy and professional and strong enough. But absolutely, again, some of the most beautiful things I've witnessed have been coffins that have been made by a friend who happens to be a carpenter, and then painted by friends who happen to be artists. And the most incredible coffins have turned up at our funeral home. They've got so much love and meaning behind them.
You said you can't display a dead body, but what about open caskets?
So you can't display a dead body in public, as in drive down the street with a dead person on display, but you can have an open coffin in a church, or some crematoria will allow it as well. But the coffin would not be able to be sort of open outside whilst driving around.
I see. I remember Jimmy told me this beautiful practical detail about, you mentioned this as well, about door size. He said, you know, if you're ever planning this, you need to make sure the doors can not only, you can pass a coffin through it, but people either side. That detail really stuck with me. I don't know why. That's obviously something, if you are really sort of thinking about maybe a non-conventional venue, you do need to think about with a coffin that, you know, if you're going to walk in with it somewhere, it has to be able to, yeah, that the openings of the doors have to be able to take the coffin and the pallbearers.
You do have to think about angles as well, and parking is another thing, and steps. That there's quite a lot to think about, and it's why people, I think, often revert to going to the crematorium just by default, because the crematoriums are set up with all of these things in mind, so it does make it a lot easier. But there are usually ways around these things.
In terms of carrying a coffin, how heavy, obviously it depends on the person, but if family members want to carry it, what might they need to think about?
Depends on the kind of coffin you've chosen and also the weight of the person who has died. So a really solid wooden coffin for a burial, for example, will add quite a lot of weight. A Somerset willow coffin will probably be a lot lighter, but if the person is quite heavy, then it can mean that it's quite a heavy carry to go to the graveside or wherever we're going. But there are ways around it. We usually say that if family and friends want to carry the person, then they absolutely should get involved and choose the coffin carefully, because a lot of wooden veneer coffins have fake handles, so you can't use the handles to carry, and that's why coffins are carried on shoulders. But if you choose a coffin that's got load-bearing handles, then you can carry using the handles at waist height, and that also stops the problem of people being different heights, making it quite tricky to carry on shoulders. And there's something really beautiful about watching a family, range of ages and different heights, and it's a way of getting children involved as well, and people who might just want to come and sort of symbolically hold on to a handle but wouldn't be able to take the weight on their shoulders. So carrying in hand is a really lovely and accessible way of getting more people involved. But just, as I said, make sure you choose the right coffin. You don't want the handles snapping off.
Yeah, I didn't know that. So, gosh, so many things to think about. Now, can we talk a little bit about woodland burials? Because that's something that in the last 10 or so years I hear a lot about. First of all, what is a woodland burial?
So a wooden burial could also be called a natural burial because they don't always take place in woodlands. It's the idea that the body of the person who has died is returned to the earth as naturally as possible. So often with natural burials, the grave depth is not as deep as it would be in a traditional cemetery. It's encouraged to use a coffin made of natural materials for the person to be dressed in, more natural fibres, and for embalming not to have taken place. And the idea as well is that the person will return to nature, and that in the purest sense, it's about becoming part of the landscape and part of nature, and without all of the traditional markers of a grave that you would get at a more traditional cemetery. So sometimes that means going into a farmer's field in the middle of nowhere and being buried and not having any markers. Some of the natural burial grounds will allow benches or wooden memorials or slate memorials. There are different kinds of memorials depending on the policy of the natural burial ground. Some are meadows, some are just fields, some are entire forests that are really quite old. Some of them are genuinely just farmers who have got a spare bit of field and will dig the grave themselves that morning and charge a couple of £100 for the burial to take place. On the other end of the spectrum, there are natural burial grounds which are part of big corporate groups now and are slightly more Centre Parks-like in feel, I'd say, than the farmer's field. So it's worth exploring. There are also, particularly in London, there are some traditional cemeteries that have designated natural burial areas. So we're often asked for a natural burial ground, but the person wants to stay within London. And there are quite a few of the more traditional cemeteries that have got areas that are just more natural and don't have all of the headstones. They can be quite expensive because burials in London are expensive. So there's a whole spectrum of prices as well, ranging from a couple of £100 to thousands and thousands of thousands of pounds. It all depends on the area, on how it feels, who it's run by, the kind of memorialization options they have. And obviously, the closer you are to London, the more expensive that's going to be.
Why are they not buried as deep as traditional cemeteries?
Because the shallower the grave, the more aerobic activity there is, so the quicker decomposition will happen, the quicker the body will return to nature. It's about getting it to the right depth so that wildlife won't start digging up the grave, but that there's enough aerobic activity for decomposition to happen.
And how can people find out about responsible natural burial grounds?
So there's the Good Funeral Guide that's got a list of recommended natural burial grounds. There's also the Natural Death Centre. They're both two really good solid places to start.
And you mentioned embalming. What is that and when does it happen?
So embalming takes place after someone has died. It can't take place until the death has been registered because it would potentially interfere with if there is any cause of suspicion. So it takes place after the person's death has been registered. And the idea is that the body is preserved by removing all the body fluids and replacing it with preserving chemicals like formaldehyde. Now, lots of funeral directors do embalm as standard, but it's actually not always completely unnecessary, but most of the time completely unnecessary. So we do sometimes embalm, but most of the time we consider it to be completely unnecessary. It does need to take place in certain circumstances. For example, if someone is being repatriated, then in order to be able to go on an aeroplane, they have to have been embalmed and all sorts of certificates have to be provided. But most of the time, unless it's been done for very specific reasons, for example, the funeral is going to be in 3 months' time, it's going to be in church, it's going to be an open coffin, it's someone from a community where they are very used to having open coffins and they expect people to be embalmed, then it can be a really valuable thing to do. But in general, it's mostly unnecessary.
How long before a human body starts to decompose? I guess if it's kept cold, indefinitely?
Not indefinitely, actually. So the moment someone has died, the process of decomposition starts to take place, things start to break down. It's really impossible to say how long things take because it's different for every single person. It will depend on how they've died, the conditions, when they died, how long until they were found. That can be a whole thing as well. If they've had to have a post-mortem, when they went into refrigeration and were kept cold. But refrigeration won't stop the process of decomposition. it will just slow it down, hopefully long enough for the funeral to take place. But it really is different for every single person. And we always say to the people that we work with that we can't make any promises, that once the person is in our care, we will look at them and we'll take care of them in the best way that we can. But ultimately, every single person is very different, and the way that they will change after they have died will be very different as well.
So if you want to organise a funeral and not have the person embalmed, what sort of length of time, what maximum length of time would you recommend between death and the actual cremation or burial?
So if the person is being kept refrigerated, in most circumstances, it should all be absolutely fine, because we don't really embalm anybody. I'd say 99% of the people that we've looked after have not been embalmed. We've never used that as a reason to have the funeral within 3 days, for example. We tend to say that between 2 and 3 weeks is a good amount of time to be able to make all the decisions that need to be made. Orders of service to be printed, sandwiches to be ordered for the wake, people to come together, people to have enough notice to travel. Between 2 to 3 weeks generally feels about right for most of the people we work with. If you have gone to a bigger funeral director, or one of the corporates, then they often keep people waiting 6 weeks, 7 weeks, 8 weeks. They might try to tell you that that's because of availability at the crematoria or the cemetery, and that's not always true. It's often to do with the availability of their fleet and their team. So if that feels like a very long time to wait, call a different funeral director. Yeah. Speak to the crematorium directly. You can do that. You can just call the crematorium office and ask about their diary. And that also is why lots of funeral directors will embalm as standard, because they do have such a delay. And then it's much easier for them to be able to manage people if they've been embalmed. But call around, ask questions. Don't just go with what the first funeral director you speak to says.
And sorry, Louise, did you say that you can't be naturally buried if you've been embalmed?
So most natural burial grounds will have a policy of no embalming in their natural burial grounds because they don't want the chemicals in the ground. However, I have had natural burials of people who have been embalmed, and it has mostly been because they died abroad and had to be embalmed in order to bring them back home.
Yeah.
So the cemetery or the natural burial ground has agreed that they will allow this as an exception, but not all of them will. So you really have to read the policy of your chosen natural burial ground to find out how flexible they will be.
Can you bury somebody in your garden?
Absolutely. You can bury someone in your garden, but if you're going to do that, be aware that it will affect the value of the property.
You have to declare it, don't you? By law, I think you have to declare it.
So you do have to take into consideration the water table, because you wouldn't want to contaminate the water supply. The best people to speak to if you're interested in burying in your own garden are the Natural Death Centre, because they will advocate on your behalf, and they've got all sorts of leaflets about all the people that you may need to contact and the things that you may need to consider. I would say if you're living in a small terrace house with a small garden at the back, it's probably not the best idea. If you own a country estate with lots of acres, then it absolutely could be a really, really incredible idea. You still have to go along with all the paperwork. You will still have to have the green form from the registrars and then send all the information back to the registrar after the burial has taken place. If you're interested in that, do have a look at the Natural Death Centre.
What is the green form? I remember that from the funerals I've arranged, but can you explain what the green form is?
So the green form is issued by the registrar. And actually, when I did my funeral director training, we're not supposed to call it the green form. Its official name is the Certificate for Burial or Cremation. And it's what the burial or cremation authority need in order for the disposal of the body, to put it really bluntly, to occur. And it's a little green slip, which is why we all call it the green form, and it's got the details of the person that's died, their age, their name, when they died, and the certificate of the registrar. And there's a little slip at the bottom, and the bit at the bottom is what the cremation or burial authority will return to the registrar, who will then update their records to say that that person has been cremated or buried. And so if you have arranged a burial on private land, then you still have to send that green slip back to the registrar's office.
Can anyone be a funeral director? And also, what should you look for when hiring one? Are there certain qualifications that they should have?
So the the funeral sector in England and Wales is completely unregulated at the moment. Anybody can call themselves a funeral director and set up a funeral home. And over the years, there have been some unscrupulous people who have done that, because wherever there are vulnerable people, there will be people who are willing to take advantage of that. Saying that, there are also some absolutely brilliant funeral directors who have never done a qualification in their life, but are the most wonderful people who have been doing the work for a very long time and are incredibly experienced. At the moment, the government is debating whether to regulate the funeral sector. I was at a trade association conference this weekend where that was absolutely on the agenda. It was being discussed at length as to what that should look like, whether it should be more of a profession and people should have to do qualifications in order to be able to become a funeral director, or it's more of a vocational activity and actually a lot of the people that fall into it and are incredible at it are not that academic and wouldn't necessarily pass lots of written tests to do this work. There's also some incredible training out there, some of which I have done, some of which I have dismissed. But people often think that funeral directors sort of fit into a stereotype, and a lot of them do, as I witnessed at the Trade Association conference the weekend. But there are also lots of people out there who don't fit into that. There is a whole spectrum of different kinds of funeral arrangers and funeral directors, and it's about finding the right fit for you. Don't just go to the local funeral director on your high street because they are there and you think you have to use them. Call around, get to know them a bit, ask questions, have a look at their websites. By law now, all funeral directors need to have their prices on their website. That was something that happened in the last couple of years. They must show a standardised price list as a PDF on their website. If they're not doing that, dismiss them immediately because they're breaking the law. There are some funeral directors that will give you 20 minutes to arrange the whole funeral, and the first question they will ask you is, how many limousines do you want? There are other funeral directors who will sit with you for hours and talk about the person that's died and have loads of cups of tea with you and ask you questions and will laugh with you and will cry with you and will work with you in a really person-centered way. So if you just go to your local high street funeral director, you're going to rob yourself of potentially going through a process of figuring out what's right for you. The Good Funeral Guide actually is a really brilliant place to look for a funeral director, because the Good Funeral Guide is a not-for-profit and they go around assessing funeral directors and speaking to them and getting to know them and looking at their premises, but really getting to know them as people and what their approach is and how emotionally intelligent they are and who it is that's going to be taking care of you. In some of the bigger companies, the person that arranges the funeral with you won't be there on the day. You will then get a completely separate conductor who will come on the day, particularly with the big corporates. It'll be someone you've never met before. With the smaller companies like mine, the person that you meet is the person that will be there throughout and handhold you through the entire process and will be there with you at the day of the funeral as well. So it all depends on what you're looking for and the approach that you want to take and whether you want it to feel more traditional or you'd like to do something which is a bit more nuanced and a bit more creative or more contemporary feeling. And there will be someone out there who is the right fit for you.
Is there no member organisation that they should be a member of?
There are two big trade associations. There's the NAFD, which represents the bigger companies, and there's SAFE, which is the Society of Allied and Independent Funeral Directors. I was at the SAFE conference this weekend, meeting lots of wonderful funeral directors. There are also lots of funeral directors that are non-trade association affiliated, because you don't have to be a member of a trade association. There's been a great reluctance from the more modern funeral directors to join the trade associations because they have felt like old boys networks, very Masonic, and lots of sort of chain wearing and going to banquets and congratulating each other has been the vibe. But they are having to change now. So I wasn't a member of a trade association and now I have joined one because I think change comes from within. So just because your funeral director isn't a member of one of them, it doesn't mean that they are rogue, but it can mean that they're rogue as well, because until the government puts in place some kind of licensing or some kind of regulation, people who are arranging a funeral are still quite vulnerable.
But equally, somebody could be a member of the trade organisation and still not give very good service.
They could. And if that does happen, which sometimes it does, things can go wrong. The good thing about using a trade association member is that there will be a whole complaints process, and there will be an independent arbitratory, I don't know if I'm saying that word right, process to go through, so that if you have had a bad experience, there will be things that can be done.
You mentioned that now by law they have to display their prices, and again, I'm imagining a funeral can cost a couple of £100 to the sky's the limit, but what does the average funeral cost in your experience?
So it really does depend on the choices that you make and which area of the country you're in. So in London at the moment, in Southeast London, our average funeral cost is about £5,000. Ours is probably quite high because we are in an area where the cost of a burial is making that average much higher than it might be elsewhere. Around here, you could pay £15,000 for the burial alone. That doesn't even include the funeral, that's just for the grave. So we're probably slightly higher. But I would say probably look at about £4,000 to £4,500 for a funeral, not including the wake.
And you know, when you see those really old graveyards by churches, can people still get buried there?
In London, no. The churchyards around the London churches closed a very, very long time ago. But out of London, sometimes yes. You might need to be resident of the parish, you might need to have a relationship with the church, but there are absolutely some of those beautiful old church graveyards which are still in use.
We mentioned some laws. Are there any we haven't covered about that's a legal requirement?
So there are two really to be mindful of. One is that you cannot display a dead body in public. And the second is that you must lawfully dispose of the body in a timely way. So that means that you cannot willfully stop a cremation or burial taking place and have a body becoming, or having a person who's died becoming a health hazard. There is a point when the funeral absolutely has to take place.
In terms of dispersal of ashes, are there any laws about what you can do with ashes?
So if you're wanting to scatter ashes, for example, you're supposed to have the permission of the landowner. There are places where ashes can be scattered, but one thing to know is that ashes are actually quite damaging to the environment. So there's a reason why the National Trust doesn't want you scattering ashes on their beautiful moorlands or parklands, because ashes are inert and actually not very helpful to the environment. Some crematory rose gardens are not in the best condition because actually ashes aren't helping the roses grow. They are affecting the soil. There is some wonderful work going on at the moment. I went to a place in Nottingham where they have got a special kind of soil which mixes with the ashes in order to make them useful so that they then don't kill the rose bushes in the crematoria. Dispersal of ashes in water is possible as well. You can also charter a boat. There are various places on the Thames where a little boat will take you out, and then you can have a ceremonial moment of placing the ashes into the water and watching them disperse. The main problem is people scattering ashes in parks. It seems like a lovely thing to do, but it's just not very helpful to the environment.
Is there anything new and upcoming in terms of body disposal? We used to just bury people and cremation was kind of really different. And now I think most people are cremated. But is there anything happening that's going to give us another option?
Yes, there are quite a few new things on the table. So Katrina Spade in the US is now doing recomposition. And the idea is that the person who's died goes into a big pod and then decomposes quite quickly and becomes a soil. That is now legal in some states in the US, and it may be coming here. There is someone who's doing it or trying to do it, just sort of doing prototypes in Nottingham. They're not using humans currently because there are very strict rules around that, but they're using animals to test the technology.
So you turn people into compost?
You can turn people into compost. It's called recomposting.
Sounds recomposting. Great.
So the laws around burial and cremation haven't been touched for a very long time. And there are some other things as well, like water hydrolysis. The idea is that there's a pod and the body goes in there and then a liquid comes in and then the body dissolves. And at the end of it, you will have bones and then everything else will have been dissolved and then the water will be released into the environment. So some people have been very funny about it because of it being released back into the water. And there are questions over that as well, which I think the people who are doing it are working with the water authorities to address. So I think that the burial and cremation laws are going through an assessment at the moment and may change. And that's when we then may see all these new technologies becoming really viable and actually an option that people will be able to choose.
This is purely in your own experience of what you've seen, because I know it varies, but do you think children should go to funerals?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. If it feels right for them. And I think the main thing when working with a bereaved child is to ask what feels right for them and not to force them to do anything that they're uncomfortable with, but equally to create a space where they feel they can ask questions and they feel they can be involved and they can participate. So we work with lots of families that have got young children, and they bring them to the funeral and they engage them in a way. And sometimes that's just lighting a candle very quietly at the beginning of the ceremony to open the space, and that's the only thing that they will do. Sometimes it's much more participatory and involves singing a special song or painting a rainbow or decorating the coffin. Often children ask to come and see the person who has died and then have lots of really insightful questions. And it's often the adults that are much more challenged by the presence of children than the children themselves.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's part of the life cycle, but that's a question I get asked a lot, and I just wondered what you thought. It's with everything you know at the moment, what would your preference be for cremation or natural burial?
My preference would be a natural burial for myself, because there's something so human and just feels very ancestral and very natural to be present when someone's body is being placed in the ground and the sound of the earth on top of the coffin. However, I've really let go of the idea of any kind of control freaking of my own funeral, and actually I would hand it over to the people who were responsible for arranging my funeral to decide what felt right for them. And if what felt right for them was for me to be cremated and then for them to have my ashes at home with them, and that felt important, then that would be absolutely fine as well.
What I've said in my will is that I have sort of some preferences with a small p, but it's entirely up to the people left behind, because I think that's the most liberating thing I can do. You know, give a bit of a guideline to say, you know, I do quite like the idea of a natural burial. I said, but if it's more convenient to cremate me and you want to send me up in a firework a la Hunter S. Thompson, I really don't mind. The only thing I have said is, please don't feel you have to come and visit my last resting place, wherever that is, because in my culture, there's so much emphasis on that. And it's taken me years to kind of unlearn the fact that I can think about a person and honour them without going and standing in what I might find a terrifying burial site.
Yeah, I think that's the most freeing funeral plan you can have. I worked with a lady who really planned her funeral and wrote it all down and then tore it up and just left a sheet behind saying, in the event of my death, please do whatever it is you feel you want and need to do.
Louise, I never thought talking about funerals could be so calming, but thank you for making it really such an interesting and nourishing conversation, and I've learned so much, and I hope this gives people a springboard from which to think about funerals and maybe what they want, and maybe open some conversations. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you for having me, Annalisa. It's been a pleasure.
See, it really wasn't that scary, was it? Thanks so much to Louise for bringing such serenity, and I would say hope, to what has traditionally been a rather terrifying subject for some, me included, once upon a time. I think Louise's phrase that the funeral is about the person who has died, but it's for the benefit of the living, is so apt. I hope this episode has given you some things to think about. Louise talked about the Good Funeral Guide and the Natural Death Centre, and you can, of course, just Google them, but I'll also put links to them in the episode description. There's so much information on those websites, so do please have a look. I'll also put links to the film Jimmy Edmonds and Jane Harris made of Josh's funeral, which is honestly one of the most beautiful funerals I've ever seen and really shows you what can be done. I'll also put a link to an article I wrote in 2018 about DIY funerals. At the end, there's a neat précis of the law and some do's and don'ts to consolidate what you've just heard here. Louise is also the co-director of an award-winning festival and community called Life, Death, Whatever, which seeks to change how we talk about death and dying. And I'll also link to that in the episode bio. The producer is Hester Kant, the music is by Toby Dunham, and our artwork is by Lo Cole. If you'd like to read my column, it appears every Saturday in The Guardian Saturday magazine.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hello, this is Annalisa. I started doing this podcast because it's an idea I really believe in, so much so that I decided to put my money where my mouth is and self-fund the project. I really want to keep releasing this podcast for free, so if you enjoy this episode, a way you can help is to visit our Acast supporter page and give what you can. You'll find the link in the episode description. Thank you.